Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find out more at my website, allbook-books.com. Listening to an interview with Charles Lyons. He was on First Voices Radio, and one of his articles, they talked about one of his articles of a small country called Suriname. He was reporting on the gold mining and the mercury poisonings that are a result of that, and the deforestation that is affecting the natural world and especially the indigenous peoples, and how it's just the seemingly hungry ghost, endless voraciousness for material substances from the earth, no matter what the consequences, which is, in simple words, forms of suicide and genocide. But it got me thinking about journalists and how suddenly stuff I've thought about for a while about the significance of journalists, but suddenly, without thinking about it too much, I feel like journalists are perhaps the most underrated and perhaps need to be one of the most revered jobs, quote unquote, because the service that they provide, if you think about it, is just, it's just astounding. And now we're in this era where the amount of censorship going on is on steroids, and there's an effort to sanitize the news to the point where you won't know nothing. They have already dumbed people down throughout history by burning, you know, book burnings and libraries and all kinds of stuff. But now it's to the point where this online censorship is the modern form of the book burning. And so we're losing touch with the facts of what is actually happening. It's as if, to use an extreme example, it is exists as if it is raining outside, but you are told it is sunny, and you go outside without an umbrella. That is, to the effect, what the faulty news reporting is. And without going off on a rant about how awful journalism has become, I want to mention a few writers that I follow and that I whose work I respect, and as examples of the art of journalism and how it provides such a service for actually knowing what's going on. And first of all, though, as I typically do when I'm about to talk about a word or a topic, I look up the etymology. And as almost always, I find it fascinating because, journal, people know what, you have your personal journal you write in every day. So what is journalism? Is that just sharing your own little thoughts? Well, not exactly. But here's the roots. Mid-14th century, book of church services. So I would semi-flippantly equate that to the mass media, the current corporate media. But then farther back, old French journal, a day, time, a day's travel or work. So that fits in with journalism, of course. It's what a journalist can do in a day and gather the information and interview people and find facts. A day's travel or work. That which takes place daily. Now, here's also an interesting part. It comes from a Latin daily, from a root D-Y-E-U, which means to shine. So that has, you know, roots, the root of that, it goes into derivatives of sky and heaven and God, but let's think rather simplistically, to shine like the sun, or to shine and shed light on a topic, because that is what the subterfuge of the mainstream and corporate news is to keep you in the dark and to keep the shadowy element of the world able to continue to perpetrate their crimes and misdemeanors and abuse of language and their propaganda. So they want to keep you in the dark. So a journalist's job is to shine light. And here's a bunch that, you know, some are gone from this physical world and some are still here. So I'll mention briefly, and you can look them up if you want. Andre Vlechek, V-L-T-C-H-E-K. He traveled so many countries and did so much work to expose the ruthlessness and the horrors of empire. And his articles always had this just strong emotion. And as a writer, I would read his articles and I wouldn't feel so all alone to hear him empathize, to hear him emoting about, you know, what does it take to get people to see what's actually going on. Another one who's passed on not long ago, William Blum, who had a news column called Anti-Empire Report. And he exposed a lot about the CIA and about the U.S. Empire's wars and the list of the overthrows of democratic governments around the world. And then also now he's just written, I think, his biography, Seymour Hersh. He exposed the scam, something I think it had to do with the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. So he exposed that. I mean, that's a journalist shining light. So that is precisely why we need journalists. Some other ones, Eva Bartlett. She's written a lot about Syria, and now she's writing about Ukraine. And that lady, she just impresses me. She seems fearless. She goes to the sites, goes to the places, which is the key difference nowadays in journalism, called stenographers or people in their little cubicles who don't even interview people. And a lot of the news feeds like AP and Reuters and all these things that, you know, when I was growing up, it was like holy gospel, like, oh, AP said, well, it's a reputable news thing, it must be truth, it doesn't matter who wrote it or what, but AP said that. But I would be highly skeptical. I mean, some of the facts may be accurate, but I would be highly skeptical of the major news organizations that are genericized. And oftentimes those are what journalists read and then write. They don't even do the homework. So there's a little bit that has a horrible description, but I want to mention it because it shows the underside of the news that you typically don't hear, with all the stuff between Russia and Ukraine and all this and that and all the stuff. Here's Bartlett, who went writing from the site. And she writes, just back from the site of a Ukrainian massacre today, just after noon, Western Donetsk. It was horrific. Chunks of flesh littered the street tens of meters from the mangled bodies still lying there. Part of a hand lay on the road, also a foot. 13 killed in the area, 9 where I saw. Bodies were strewn on the ground where the munition struck, another inside a shop, a sight I will never forget, an older woman's body, only the upper half. This is pure Ukrainian terrorism. Nowhere is safe in Donetsk. So aside from the horrificness of it, there in a few sentences, she presents the unsanitized version. You know, not to say they're the only ones causing atrocities, but the way Ukraine is being glorified in the news, in the mainstream, that shows the opposite of that, as well as telling you what's going on in Donetsk. It gives you an empathetic sense of the people there and where to go or not to go. And another fearless guy also reporting a lot on Ukraine by actually going into the villages and literally talking to the people and with the people, listening to them, letting them tell their stories, not trying to push a scripted agenda. As Patrick Lancaster, you can look up his videos. And one of my new heroes, a 13-year-old, Faina Savankova. She's a journalist from Ukraine. And here's an article about her. It's an interview, but I'll read the introduction, not by her, but it gives some background. If you ask most teenagers in the U.S. or Europe what they like to do, they'll probably tell you they enjoy playing video games like Call of Duty, where they pretend to be at war. For them, war is a game, an entertaining way to spend their time after school or on weekends. For 13-year-old Faina Savankova, war is no game, but a terrifying daily reality she has faced for 8 long years. 2 weeks ago, I first wrote about Faina, the child writer from eastern Ukraine. She has been surrounded by war since she was just 5 years old. She first began writing about it when she was 10 as a way to cope with the daily fear of bombardment, and she hopes that her writing will bring attention to the plight of other children in the war-torn region of Donbas where she lives. In the West, most people seem to believe that the war in Ukraine began in February 2022 when Russian forces first crossed the border, and mainstream media makes the war sound simplistic and two-dimensional, like a comic book with bad guys and good guys, as though Russians are orcs from Mordor and President Vladimir Putin is an evil madman who invaded Ukraine for no reason other than his seething hatred for humanity and his desire for world domination. As they say, truth is the first casualty of war. In reality, many of the people living in eastern Ukraine begged Putin to intervene for years before he finally relented. And during those years, the people of Donbas lived in their basements as Ukrainian nationalists who idealized mass murderers like Stephen Bandera and Roman Shukovich bombed their homes, churches, schools, markets, and other civilian places. The Russian-speaking residents of eastern Ukraine have been under attack by Ukrainian forces backed by the U.S. and NATO ever since the Maidan coup, which ripped Ukraine asunder in 2014. Just last week, Russian forces finally secured the entire region of Lugansk, wresting it out of Ukrainian control, but the war rages on in Donetsk and in other parts of eastern Ukraine, and civilians continue to die, many of them children. Faina wants Americans to know what she and other children in the breakaway People's Republics of Lugansk and Donetsk have been going through all this time. I talked with her via text on a Russian social media site where we have become acquainted. I also invited her to write an open letter to the American people, which I will include in this article. And she's actually, along with some other people, she is on a Ukrainian kill list called Miro Dvoretz. Also on that list is musician activist Roger Waters. Because the people running that part of Ukraine don't want anything negative said about them. And this is, the interview was by Deborah Armstrong. And with regard to the Miro Dvoretz, which ironically means peacemaker, this is what Faina had to say about it. I wrote a video appeal to the UN last year about how children shouldn't die in war. In October, this website posted my contact information and home address, violating international laws on personal data. Now my data is on the internet. This is a danger to my life because in addition to nationalists, there are human traffickers and just murderers. My case caused a scandal and reached the UN Secretary General and UNICEF, but unfortunately all they did was express concern, and the danger to my life remains. Nevertheless, I will continue to fight this site because it's not just me, but many other children as well. It's difficult for me to explain to Americans what Miro Dvoretz is. This site posts the data of those who disagree with the authorities of Ukraine under the pretext that these people are, quote, enemies of Ukraine, end quote. By comparison, imagine if the Ku Klux Klan opened such a website in the U.S. with a server located in Russia and listed politicians, actors, musicians, public figures, and anyone who expresses a different opinion and posted their addresses and bank accounts and openly called for reprisals against them. Of course, I fear for my life, but I will do everything I can to have this site shut down and the organizers brought before an international court. European journalists and the Russian Foundation for Battling Injustice and Mira Tarada, the foundation spokesperson, are helping me. I hope that everything will work out for us. How old were you when the war started, and what are your first memories of the war? When the war began, I was 5 years old. My first memories are of the frightening rumbling, the dark basement, dogs and cats which were abandoned, roaming the yards and streets. At that age, you perceive everything differently. You don't have the sense of fear that adults have. It's probably because you don't understand that you could die, so you just sit there counting the explosions, studying a spider that weaves its web in the corner of the damp basement, praying that it will end quickly. And I'll read another one here. Americans don't believe there are Nazis in Ukraine. What would you say to them? Unfortunately, in America, not many people know much about what happened in our country, even the fact that we have had a war going on. Americans only learned about it in 2022 when the Russian operation in Ukraine began. The American media said that evil Putin attacked poor Ukraine. Of course, many believed it. True, the media forgot to mention that Ukraine has been killing civilians in Donbass for 8 years. I don't know what Nazism means to Americans. To me, it's lack of freedom, prohibition to speak your mind, the worship of Bandera and Hitler, the shelling of peaceful cities, the killing of children. That's Nazism. But I would probably suggest that these people come to Donetsk and Makayevka and live there under the bombardment. What do you think about Russia's special military operation? When I signed a letter from 100 fiction writers in support of Russia's special operation in Ukraine, many people condemned me. Both then and now, I have no doubts about the rightness of this decision. Ukraine is killing children and women. They shoot at kindergartens, schools, and homes, and people are dying because of it. And the only country that can save us is Russia. Of course, Russia might not have sent its army to help Donbass because Russian soldiers are also dying. But thanks to the army, I can live more or less peacefully in Lugansk, and I already fear less for my life. And so there's also going to be votes, referendums coming up where some of these peoples in these areas will most likely decide to declare themselves as part of Russia. So that's going to put a whole new spin on what's happening. And another one, how do you feel about the U.S. and NATO, quote, defending, end quote, Ukraine? I don't think they are defending Ukraine. Handing them weapons is not helping them because Ukrainian soldiers are dying, not American or NATO soldiers. So this isn't supporting them. It's sending an entire nation to its death. Now, if that's not open-minded compassion for both sides, I don't know what is. And as I mentioned before, I'm not defending or pro-war, but I think it's important that this kind of information be out there, because when it's not, the masses of people who read news are hoodwinked and in the dark. So I tip my hat, and if she was local, I would want to meet her. What courage this young woman, Faina Savinkova, 13 years old, writing, speaking out, doing interviews from her perspective and her people's. Other journalists I respect and follow for their honesty: Vanessa Beely, John Pilger, P-I-L-G-E-R, Pepe Escobar, and Max Blumenthal, and The Gray Zone, his and others' website. And then comedically, the news from Jimmy Dore, D-O-R-E. And I will say that as good and as much as I follow these people and I like, also what's missing from the journalism is oftentimes, which is why, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, that part of the spark for this was from listening to First Voices Radio, which gives an indigenous perspective around the world, aka Mother Earth. So a lot of the main, you know, a lot of the even, quote, left or non-mainstream media will still be slanted to an effect by not representing the perspective and the energies of the extreme minorities of the planet, the indigenous peoples, and the least minority, but the most important of the planet is Mother Earth herself. She unifies everything and everyone. So it almost seems like a big duh to think, well, why do I have to listen to First Voices Radio and check other news? Also, I mentioned Brenda Norell at Censored News, which also reports on native issues. And it's like, why do I have to go check those sites to be reminded that there is one Earth and the history of hundreds and literally thousands of years of a distraction from that has caused that problem? So it seems like simple and obvious no-brainer, but takes a lot of time and effort to kind of deprogram and reprogram into, but the, it's already right there. You can figure it out for yourself if you just think, oh yeah, one Earth, hey, that changes your view on what you're going to look at in the news. And part of the reason that I think it's important to follow specific journalists who go to the sites is because of the amount of deliberate shenanigans in the news. And here's an example, this article at RT.com, U.S. PSYOPs exposed. Washington isn't concerned about morals, it's worried about getting caught. Pentagon orders urgent review of after its global scheme is compromised. And here's how the article starts. A bombshell Washington Post investigation, even though they're not legitimate, has revealed, because they're run by Bezos, revealed that the Pentagon is conducting a sweeping audit of how it conducts clandestine information warfare after a variety of social media accounts which its operatives used to target foreign audiences in elaborate psychological warfare efforts were exposed. The accounts violated platform rules and were eventually busted by researchers and the social networks they weaponized. Those fears were apparently stoked by the release of a landmark report in August by social media analytics firm Graphica and the Stanford Internet Observatory, which found that over the past 5 years, hundreds of accounts disseminating pro-Western narratives, such as a recent propaganda blitz that advanced anti-Russian narratives, including criticism of the Kremlin's, in quote, imperialist war in Ukraine, were likely being run by the Pentagon's CENTCOM unit. CENTCOM, C-E-N-T-C-O-M, is responsible for military operations of every sort across 21 countries in the Middle East, North Africa, and Central and South Asia. According to Graphica's report, among the accounts taken down was a fictional Persian language news outlet that shared content reposted from U.S. state-run propaganda platforms Voice of America Farsi and Radio Free Europe. So now you see why much of what you can read online, even if it's personal narratives, personal stories, websites that are faked, fictional Persian language news outlet. So that's how sneaky it is. And that's why I've tried to follow journalists who I can read their personal, reports and stories. And I'll mention one more site to add to the mix that I've started reading more of recently, which I like a lot, Deep Green Resistance News Service. A lot of the information, a lot of the articles and information has to do with colonialism and protection of the earth and the natural world. Colonialism and conquest, human supremacy, male supremacy, repression at home, white supremacy, worker exploitation. Gives lots of solutions and actions. There's music and art, and even my poems get posted there. So there's a recent article about the greenwashing. Very informative with umpteen footnotes. Here's one thing. It says, this guy, humanity is running an ecological Ponzi scheme in which society robs nature and future generations to pay for boosting incomes in the short term. And now everybody's saying, getting off fossil fuel is the solution. Greenhouse gas concentration will continue to increase via positive feedback such as melting permafrost and the release of stored methane, resulting in further delay of temperature-reducing responses, even if humanity stops using fossil fuels entirely well before 2030. So there's a response that says there's way more to the picture than stopping fossil fuels. And the weaponization of environmentalism, in quotes, as a political ideology rather than being viewed as a universal mode of self-preservation and planetary protection that ought to transcend political tribalism. So much of the narrative around the climate and around the what's going on is spearheaded by big tech websites, technology, governments, and corporations. A little bit redundant there, but they're the ones promoting all the green technology without looking more deeply into it. So that's part of what deep green, or ignoring the rest of it, that's part of what Deep Green Resistance News Service is about. And another line that stood out in that article, the gravity of the situation requires fundamental changes to global capitalism and education. Fundamental changes. So rather than just shifting to these are the solutions of the energy solutions, people need to look at restructuring, fundamental changes to the way we do business, the way we think, the way we care for the earth and the waters and the air and all species and our neighbors and all beings. So that's a brief overview of the overview of the underbelly of the news, as plus some highlights. And if you have any journalists or video people or comedians or writers or anybody that you follow and you think might be along my wavelength, feel free to let me know. I'm always open to finding out more and learning more, and I hope you are too. All right, take care, be well.